Nice. Okay, so today we are talking about coaching with our clients' inner compass, and we're literally going into the client's compass today. I've got some fun stuff for us to talk about. So, let me just share my screen. So what we're going to do today is revisit the purpose of this module. So you remind yourself of all of that. We're going to talk about your clients, and I've got a really fun practical exercise for us to do, which is a way of getting into your marketing or potential marketing and how you can use this work to do that in a way that feels supernatural and not salesy and gross. Okay. So what I'm hoping is you're going to walk away with some fun activities to play with in terms of marketing. We even set a little challenge with the morning class. So if you're up for a challenge, then we can take that on as well. And this will all give you some good juicy stuff to talk about in your practice pods. Yeah. Okay. So just a reminder of our, this is the compass, right? This framework where we've got the healthy self in the middle, looking after the protector, and the healthy self has access to self-belief, self-acceptance, self-worth, and self-trust. And those resources, those qualities all have little kind of patterns of protection within them, the sort of shadows of those resources. And so we're looking after those as well, right? We're really getting a sense of, for the client, when we enter their world, how do they protect themselves and how do they kind of step out and do the things that they want to do? And the reason that we want to kind of get into our client's world is because we want to support them to feel three things, three key things: reassured that their self-doubt's never created in a vacuum. There's always a really bloody good reason for it, right? It's usually connected to some kind of past experience or some messaging that they've had from another person or a group of people or even society at large, that they've made some meaning from it. So we want them to feel reassured that their self-doubt is useful. It's important. We want them to want to help them feel reflective so they can make sense of where their self-doubts come from and how they can bring their healthy self sort of lens or perspective to those past experiences to make new meaning, to make more useful or healthier or helpful meaning. And in turn, that they can feel resourced, right? So they can lean into their healthy self to take the next step. When clients can feel this, it's like, oh, okay, I kind of know where I'm going now. I'm in choice. And that's really, really key, right? So when we help our clients to access their healthy self, they know that they are creative, that they are resourced, that they have access to this part of them. That they can lean into these qualities: self-belief, self-acceptance, self-worth, self-trust. And we, as self-belief coaches, show our clients how to access these parts, how to see that they're in choice, how to talk to themselves in a way that's like, oh, this part is in me. It's not just an idea. It's a thing that I embody. And as a result of that, we help our clients to kind of expand their self-concept. So they're growing their awareness of things like their protective beliefs and behaviors, their survival strategies. We help to positively impact their sensitivity to some risks. You know, why is it that I'm always bloody holding myself back? Oh, it's this risk that I'm sensitive to, and it's all about rejection. So I'm going to do whatever I can to try and avoid that. But when I know, when I can anticipate that there may be a risk of rejection with whatever I'm attempting, I can see that there I have choices in that moment. I can do things to support myself, to create conditions where there is less of an impact of that risk, and I can just be with whatever happens. Or I'm more resourced to, you know, if Marjorie from accounts hates the idea I have for this new project, I can kind of be okay with that. It's like, you know, am I really going to twist myself in knots to avoid that? Or can I actually tolerate that risk? Yeah. over time, as our clients start to play with these concepts, their healthy self starts to take over as that automatic voice, their automatic responses. I don't want to say programming. We're not reprogramming because I don't believe a human is a computer. but there's something about relearning different ways, healthier ways that we can respond to these situations that in the past may have rendered us feeling like we had no other option but to hold back. So one of the reasons that I think this is super helpful to just revisit and to remind ourselves of, and as we kind of turn our focus onto our clients, your clients, where they enter this our world and what their experience is. One of the things I found over the years of working mostly one-to-one, and more recently, and I have for the last just over a year, I've had this group program which is called Self Belief School, and it's where I kind of bring all of these concepts together and teach the muggles. What I have found is that our clients only need to have a couple of experiences where they're interrupting that pattern, that old pattern, and they're starting to see, oh, I can make a different choice here, and they have that experience of a different choice and the benefits of doing that. It only takes 2-3 times for that to happen, and they're just kind of off and running. All to say, this is one of the total gifts of developmental coaching, is we're meeting our clients where they are, entering their world and helping both of us to kind of make sense of it so they can make new choices. It means that however you like to work with your clients, right, whether it's one-off sessions or, you know, over a period of a couple of months or longer than that. What I've discovered over the years, and particularly with this work, is that I really like the long-term connection with folks. I used to worry, we're just going to run out of stuff to talk about. Clients going to stop feeling like this is valuable, or something. They're just going to reach a stage where they just don't need coaching anymore. They don't value it anymore. What I found is that actually, the more we go into this work, for some clients, they love the depth that it brings, because it kind of doesn't matter where you're at or how many times you've gone through this. It's like, oh, here's a new layer. Here's a way of me understanding myself in greater detail. Is a way of me figuring this out. So however you like to work with clients, whether it is that kind of long-term connection, or whether it is, you know, just one-off sessions, or however you like to do it in anywhere in between, you can use these approaches to make an impact and really effectively support your client to get what they need, you know. And part of this is about obviously how they like to work too. So all to say, like, entering our client's world, figuring out where they are in the compass, and then supporting them to make good choices. It kind of doesn't matter what kind of coaching you're doing, like the sort of flavor of your work. Using these approaches, it can have a really great impact on your clients, and that's hugely satisfying, I think, for us as practitioners. Yeah. So I just wanted to spend some time today, just for anyone who's just joined us. I think someone joined us, can't remember who it was. Just to let you know, what I wanted us to do today is really start to think more with more discernment, and bringing your understanding of this work into your client's world, so that we can start to think about how you're going to market this to your people. So I wanted to share with you one of my absolutely favorite approaches to this. And I think for any of you who've known me for a while, you'll know that I bloody hate marketing, like just the bro marketing world. It's just so tedious. And most of it is just so freaking dumb. It's like, oh, Captain Obvious stuff, right? So for me, it's like boring. So I've got a very kind of rebellious relationship when it comes to marketing. What I love is connection, empathy, curiosity. I love the kind of the puzzle solving of distilling what is sometimes quite a complex idea into something that is bite-sized without patronizing the client. Like for me, that feels like my endless task, right? Is how can I share this with you so you get a sense of this depth here without it being super obvious and with, and sharing that message. So all to say, this is a process I use. I used this yesterday to write a post that I've just put up on social media. And this is what I do. So we're going to do this together. I'm going to give you some a screen share here. So what I want you to do is to spend 5 minutes, maybe five-ish minutes. We'll kind of pause and do this. And I want you to reflect on these four things before your clients work with you. Right, you think about the kinds of people that you love to work with, either the kinds of people you work with, the kinds of coaching you do, or the kinds of problems you like to help them solve. What are your clients, what's your client's world like before they work with you? What are they thinking to themselves? What are they feeling most of the time? What are they saying to themselves? What are they doing as a result? Couple of things, don't overthink it. And yes, you're making a ton of generalized assumptions, like kind of go with it, right? Give yourself permission to guess. Yeah. If you are new to setting up your practice or you're not quite sure who your people are, take a punt, right? Just think about the kinds of folks that you would love to work with and where are they at? So this could be based on, actual real people, and it could also be based on the kinds of things you're seeing out in the world, the people you know, and it could also be you making a ton of assumptions. But we're just going to take 5 minutes. I'm just going to pause the recording for a sec. How do I do that without stopping the share? Yeah. I live in mortal fear of forgetting to do that. Okay, we're recording again. So we just, for anyone watching the recording, we just took 5 minutes. I highly recommend doing that because procrastinators are us and we'll just put it off. And there's nothing like taking 5 minutes to do this. So what I'd love is for a couple of people just to sort of volunteer, like, where are you at? And then what we'll do is look at, okay, so then how can you then kind of go into this in terms of your working with your client using the compass? And it's totally okay if it's not tied up in a neat bow, or if you're a bit like, oh, it's a bit vague, don't really know. So, who wants to volunteer? I'm totally happy to pick someone. Yay, Colette and Jane. Awesome. Awesome. See, you Americans need to up your games. Love it. All right, Colette, let's start with you, lovely.
Hey there. So I'm thinking really about young people. So it's kind of a different group set, really. And it's interesting thinking about the healthy adult self. I mean, most of them are older teenagers, so we can dip into that. So I found it quite easy to do this because they kind of like they all think they're the only one, but actually they're all the same. In lots of ways, they're not all the same, of course, but the insecurity is the same. So, do you want me to go through what I've written?
Yeah, like I guess what would be helpful maybe is to think about like when you, and maybe what I'll do is just share my screen. When you think about the kind of compass stuff and particularly the protective patterns, what comes up for you? Like what do you see and what do you think is most kind of prevalent, if you like, in your clients?
So it's things like if only I was more confident. Lots of if onlys, lots of if onlys. If only I could fit in more, why am I so blah, 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 you know, put in the blank. Why am I the only one who feels this way? So it's kind of like, if only I could be like this, my world will be different.
Yeah.
But they don't really know how to do anything about it. And so they kind of feel lost, and they don't trust themselves. They don't trust other people. Quite often they don't trust their friends. Sometimes they don't have friends. And the things they're saying to me is like, well, I'm the quiet one. Lots of keeping the peace, don't want to upset other people pleasing, wants to make sure everything is kind of okay with their friendships or their parents or their teachers or whoever it is.
Yeah.
So I guess when we think about the compass, it's about the self-acceptance, really. The kind of, you know, let's be everything to everyone and see if I can keep the peace and make sure the boat doesn't rock, because if it does, I'm terrified of what will happen next.
Yeah, I see that too. Like, that sounds bang on to me.
Yeah. And the things they're doing is working really, really hard most of the time, scrolling a lot, doing lots of people pleasing, lots of avoiding, and a little bit of blaming.
Love it. Because I think what I'm hearing is there's a bit of martyr and a bit of scapegoat in
there. Yeah.
Right. That kind of combo. And that's very, that's a very powerful combination, right? Because it's all about, basically this combo is sort of like, I'm going to abandon myself. I kind of don't believe I can do anything because it's so much harder for me. And the thing I'm most concerned about is making sure other people see that I matter, or giving them the job of making me feel like I matter.
Yeah.
So that's kind of fascinating as a sort of age and stage thing as well, isn't it? Because for folks in that younger age group, they're more likely to be in the forming self-concept stage, right? They're sort of figuring out, who am I? And I'm very attached to the relationships that I have. And there is actually a stage before that that kind of fits with childhood development, because they're sort of entering out of that. And that's where we pretty much believe we're the center of our own universes, right? Yeah. When we're in that stage, I'm sure that's familiar to you.
Yeah.
It's almost quite difficult to empathize with other people because we're so entrenched in our own experience. And that sort of fits with the story, I'm the only one.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, I'm invisible.
Yeah.
And so what would it be like to not be invisible? That's quite scary, really.
Yeah. There's a lot of risks attached with
that. Yeah.
So one could assume that if we're starting to work around the compass stuff, we've usually probably done some work around where their self-doubt comes from. We've usually got a sense of the kinds of protective beliefs that might be in charge. They may have done some experiments with that already, you know, as we're starting to look at this. So all to say, it's likely that as you move into working with a compass with a client, that you're working with someone who's a pretty informed participant, if you like. They're going to know a bit about this and a bit about themselves. And so remember, when we work with protective patterns, we sort of go one around the compass, right? Because we can't sort of heal or solve self-doubt with the same energy that created it. So we need to bring something new in. So it looks like, you know, for your folks, Colette, that working with self-trust and self-worth, amazing, right? Like for teenagers and young adults, to have a really healthy sense of self-worth and self-trust is just freaking brilliant.
Yeah.
And so that's about like bringing in, you know, things like, you know, how are they advocating for their own needs and preferences and opinions? What even are they? You know, how do they figure those out? How do they tap into their own sense of what's a yes and what's a no for them?
Yeah. That's big.
So you can sort of see, right, that as you start to do, as you do a bit of that assessment work and using your own curiosity and discernment of where are my clients at, what are they what's their world like, then it gives you a path to look at what's the best intervention.
Yeah.
And I think and one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this from the perspective of marketing is, as you start to talk to your clients before they're working with you and showing them, I get where you're at, you make sense to me, here's how I can help, this might be where what your experience is right now, here's the way through. It's like you're giving them a reason to understand why working with you is going to help them.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, I've got a couple of clients that I'm doing some coaching work with at the moment, and they do really get it, actually.
Yeah.
Even though they're younger, they really get it. And it's like, and we're just starting to do a few experiments, like what's the smallest possible step, that kind of, that's where we are with them. It's like nice. Looking at how they take that step. So they do get it.
Yeah, that's fair.
But I guess the question I've got is that I'm not really marketing to them, marketing to their parents.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because you've got a similar challenge, I think, to folks who go into organisations and coach the staff,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you almost have two bosses, if you like,
yeah.
Two clients. You have the parent and the team, or the young person. But what I would, well, I wonder if you've already done some thinking around this, how to reach the bill payer, if you like, so this applies to anyone who's working in an organization as well. How do you appeal to the bill payer? Like, what is it that they want for their person who is going to become your client that you can help them see as well what the benefits are?
Yeah. So, I mean, they all want them to be happy and to do the best that they can at school, college, university, whatever it is, settle into transitions.
Yeah.
So, so that's really where I'm going. It's like, how can you invest in your child? You know, you've invested 16 years to bring them to where they are now. How can you invest in monetary terms to get them the support they need right now to get over this next hurdle?
Yeah. And just as I'm hearing you speak, I'm thinking, as a non-parent, so this is a total assumption, right? As I'm thinking that parents will also, like, you want your kids to be happy. That might feel quite vague to you because you're not really sure what happiness means to them.
I think we need to challenge that because we can't be happy all the time.
Right?
We have to be content, you know? If we can get to contentment, then we're okay.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm thinking about this, you know, to me, like, happiness equals feeling resourced no matter what the hell happens.
Yeah.
Right, like being willing to just kind of take a punt on something because you want to, knowing that there's risks and uncertainties and we're not quite sure what's going to happen, but being willing to do that just for the sake of kind of being all the way alive, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking as well, like, even quantifying what, you know, you just want your kid to be happier. Let's talk about what that actually means.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I honestly think that the more specific you can get,
yeah,
the more people can go, oh, that's me.
Yeah,
that's my situation. It's like the universal becomes the personal very easily.
Yeah.
But I wonder how this works for you, Colette, just as a kind of exercise and starting off that sort of brainstorming of where your clients are at, what they're thinking, feeling, saying, doing, how you can kind of enter into their world and then tell them a story that sort of helps them see the path.
Yeah, okay.
One of the things I've done in the past, I used to have this on my wall behind my where my computer is now. I'd have four bits of A3 paper with thinking, feeling, saying, doing on it. And every time I kind of finished up a session, if a client had sort of given me a bit of a nugget, you know, this is what I say to myself, or, you know, I'll ask the question and then they tell me, right? Then I'd jot that down on a piece of paper, because then I have this constantly refreshed resource for marketing messages that's based on real people, real experiences, not just that fantasy client avatar. Because the fantasy client avatar usually 120% ready to do the work. And I think we've talked about this before. Like, what I found is that almost no one wants to look at their self-doubt. You know, it's not like, sweet, I really want to invest in that. You know, they need some help to figure out what the benefit is.
Yeah.
Because it feels like hard work for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So all to say, Colette, it sounds to me like you've got a really clear idea of, you know, that self-worth, self-trust place is probably where it's a great sort of place to start.
Yeah.
And then looking at how relevant is that, you know, in what ways is it relevant for your clients? You know, how can you come up with useful content, useful messaging that fits with the client group you're trying to reach, which is, you know, slightly abstracted maybe from your end client in this context.
I think I've got some ideas of how that would fit in with, particularly around transitions of going to college, going to university. That seems to fit really well, and I think, you know, when kids are younger, I think parents tend to kind of go, oh well, all kids are like that, you know, don't really pay much. But when they're moving on, then they go, okay, we need to get this right. Let's do something. So
yeah,
feels more important somehow.
Yeah, and even that thing of one of my favorite sort of storytelling techniques is like picture yourself in, you know, a close future time frame. So it could even be for parents, you know, when your kids come home for Christmas after their first term away at college, how do you want that to go? You know, it's that kind of, you know, putting yourself in that future position so you can act now to kind of support your people.
And I've actually been working with a girl who's literally done just that. Been working with her for about a year, and they didn't know if she was going to get to uni. Kind of thought she would, but she's just gone, and her mum has been like really panicking in the background. I'm like, it's okay, she's got it. We're okay. Don't panic, because then you make her panic. And actually, you know, we're 4 weeks in now and she's doing really well. So
that's brilliant. Yeah.
And part of it is going through some of the coaching tools.
Yeah. That's so great. How cool. How cool. And I imagine for you as well, there is a sense of them flying the nest and all of that.
I feel like a proud mum, and she's not my daughter, but it's like, you know, there was a risk, you know, there's also a risk when they go off, you know, but yeah, it was great.
So great. I love that. Brilliant. So what I hope, Clee, is that helps you to sort of go, oh, this is how I can bring my coaching perspective into my marketing, so I don't feel like I have to pluck this out of nowhere and hope for the best.
No, that's really useful.
Yeah, brilliant. Nice, thanks for sharing. Really cool. Jane, did you want to give us a share as well?
Yeah, sure. My target audience are, I guess, people in the helping professions, and in particular, people in the creative industries. So including creative organizations, as well as freelance artists who are working in a kind of health and wellbeing context to support others, to support people in need. And the biggest, oh, I can see where they sit on the compass.
Yeah.
Very clearly. And, you know, what they're thinking often is, I'm stuck. I don't know how to make a decision or move forward. I have no power, no agency. Nothing is going to change. But this is killing me. What can I do about it?
Yeah.
And they're feeling really overwhelmed. They don't know how to make time for themselves, given the scale of work that's needed and the needs of the people they're working with. They're hungry for play and fun and creativity. They're really thirsty for that kind of enjoyment, but they're just overgiving all the time. And they're saying things like, you know, I don't know how to change this. I don't want to stop doing what I'm doing, but I don't know how to make it better for myself. And what they're doing is just busy work, is a lot of placating, placating and people pleasing and overworking, over delivering, over giving in this kind of hamster wheel. If only I keep going and finally there'll be space somewhere. But the thing that is the kind of problem here, I think, is the a lot of them are in this you matter, I don't matter, which explains the martyr. And in fact, I used a lot of your conflict stuff last week. I ran a workshop around managing boundaries. Fabulous. It worked really well. And it was really interesting. I invented a quiz, a kind of, here's a scenario that was a work scenario they might find themselves in. Would you A, B, C, D, E? And they had to choose. And then it was like, well, let's see what conflict style from your answers. And one person, and they were mostly accommodating, you won't be surprised. And one person actually said, ah, I keep choosing C. And I know I would choose C, but I want to be A. So she's basically saying, I'm accommodating all the time, but I want to be assertive.
Nice.
But the problem is, it's like, you matter, I don't matter. I can't spend money on me. My needs don't matter. Other people's needs are far greater. Therefore, I don't really need help or deserve help or can afford help.
I just love the deep insight that you have with your people. This is so cool. And how great is it? Like, for anyone who's going, oh, Jane ran a workshop and used the conflict stuff. We only did that a month ago. Yeah, be in relationship with it. Like, take brave steps, because now I imagine, Jane, you have so much information about your potential clients. That means the next thing you do is going to be, you know, way more informed, way more, you know, there'll be a richness and a depth to what you know about your potential clients.
Well, I've got some tools to work with now, which is, and I'm just going to read you. I've just got some of the feedback. And one of them was, given what you said in the introduction, I will take away greater awareness of my habits, what boundaries I am privileged to, and how tiring this work can be.
Yeah.
So just that thing about awareness being the first step. But it's getting people into the room that's the problem, because of this, you know, my needs don't matter. I've just got to go and serve and over deliver. And
so, given that that's a challenge for your people, right, to cut, to give themselves the space. And I'm just so taken with how this works. I love it when this happens. When you've got a really strong martyr, right, we need to go to self-worth, which is all about the space you take up, advocating for yourself and your boundaries, right? So, even speaking directly to that, you know, hey, people who hold space for others, if you believe you don't matter, here's where you're wrong. You know, you can be kind of provocative about this. Or here's what I want you to know. Here's what I wish you did differently. So you've got that sort of, I see you and I can help you make different choices, because I know that's actually what you value too. That's a really compelling message for folks.
What's really interesting about that is when you said, and here's where you're wrong, is I notice the people pleaser in me who's a bit scared of saying that.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to say that.
Well, yeah. Maybe I do actually.
But there is something about the bravery, I think, the courage that it takes. And I know, Angela, you do a lot of this work around your marketing approach, is just having the willingness to point out the tricky thing, right? To point out the thing that you know your client's probably thinking, because you've had half a dozen people tell you this, right? But it's, it becomes like a bit of a shameful secret, because we don't, none of us will share this. So being willing to shine a light on that and talk about it, it builds trust, I think. It builds a sense of safety between you and the person reading that. Because they're like, whoa, she does get this. She sees me, you know. Whereas I think if we kind of do the thing where we sort of say the nice thing around the edges, it becomes a bit anodyne, and it's a bit beige and a bit like, what am I even saying? So I think there's something about, you know, going through that process of going, okay, what do my clients kind of need to hear? What's the most helpful thing I can share? But then also, and what's the most effective way to say it? You know, and how can you kind of tell the truth and say what you know to be true? Maybe take some braver steps than you might, you know, 1% braver kind of messaging than you might have used before. And see what comes up. You know, it's all an experiment. I'm wondering, Jane, if that helps you to just also see, like, oh, okay, there's a number of kind of messages or ideas that you could float around, just even sitting in that master place.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something about acknowledging one's own needs and standard. It's definitely all about boundaries. It comes back to boundaries, I think. But it's not just about how to hold a boundary. It's about how to even identify what your needs are in order to know where and how to hold a boundary.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether that takes me to self-belief and sovereign. It probably takes me back to sovereign, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think as well, like, part of this is about not trying to give the whole story in one post, one message, one newsletter, etc. It's almost like there will be, if you kind of really go deep on the relationship that your potential clients have with that martyr protective pattern, you could probably come up with 50 bits of useful information to kind of help them see themselves in that, help them understand what that's like. I'm also thinking about things like the consequences for your clients when you live from there, like how hard it is to detach from outcomes, how, you know, you may find yourself ruminating over conversations you've had with clients because you're entangled, all of that kind of jazz. If you're a space holder with a martyr pattern, that has real consequences for clients. So all to say, like, there's probably maybe 50 different stories, little stories that you could tell around your client's relationship with that pattern. And inevitably you're going to, you know, it's going to leak over into other aspects of the compass and all of that jazz. Yeah. What I'm hoping is for those of you here and watching the recording is that you start to see that you, when you can kind of root yourself into your client's experience and have that be the thing that leads your messaging, it's so much more powerful. Because, you know, if for those of us who are kind of, you know, in the content minds, you know, it can feel a bit like you're just throwing spaghetti at a wall. And I think part of this is about, you know, you just don't need to do that. You've got a really great way of seeing, okay, what is my client's experience like and how do I help? Colette, Jane, I'm hoping that helps you just to kind of place yourself in all of this and see how this can help. These are great examples. I want to show you how to take this just a couple of steps further. And we're going to take 5 minutes again to do this because I think it's just super useful to spend the time in the call, right? Rather than wait till you've got 5 minutes. When are you going to have 5 minutes? Okay, so let me share my screen. So here are the prompts that I come back to again and again and again. Write love notes to your clients. So the three that I tend to use: dear beloved client, here's what I know about your challenge. Here's what I wish you knew. And here's what I see in your post-coaching future, right? Like after you work with me. So we're going to I'm just going to pause the recording for 5 minutes so that you can complete this. Paused. Recording unpaused. okay, so let's have a bit of a debrief on what came up for you. What Team America? I always think of that. What was that puppet show? Team America. Fuck yeah! Do you remember that? Sorry, I can't even remember what they were. No problem, Adrian. Please take care of yourself. Voiceless. Team America, World Police. Oh, you're my hero for remembering that. Yeah. So, Angela, Tina, what's coming up for you guys? What stories do you want to tell your clients? Tell me everything.
Tina, do you want to go? Okay, well, I'll share just a couple things. What I'm realizing is I'm having my own kind of like mind blown moment of I'm in a pivot in my own business. And, you know, when we did the former exercise, which I've done a lot before, of, you know, what are they thinking? What are they feeling? Also with this exercise, I realize I've been communicating and connecting with clients who are no longer ideal clients. And so I've been speaking to an older version of myself, which has probably been one of the biggest reasons why my own marketing and business has felt so boring the last year. And so so one of the things is just like what I know, you've worked really hard, you've accomplished a lot, you've overcome a lot, and it's time for a pivot. And that is really fucking scary. What if it doesn't work? What if it'll be too hard? What if you'll once again fall just short of your goals? And so it's essentially, you know, getting into my own head of like, what are the things that I wish I would have heard about 2 years ago?
Mm.
So those are a couple of my thoughts so far.
Oh, I love that. Isn't it cool when you, so I just want to also say, like, just taking 5 minutes to kind of tune in with who you are now and who your clients are. And the same thing happened this morning with this morning's class. Cassie was like, oh, I realize I'm kind of talking to myself. Like I'm figuring this out for myself as much as my clients. Mm-hmm. I think that happens all the time. And then there is this other part when your business is a little more established as you are, Angela, where it's like, oh, now I'm evolving and pivoting into this new space. So yeah, my marketing needs to come along with me. So I kind of love like those emotional responses to our marketing, like boredom or resentment or frustration or just kind of meh. It's like these are great indications that something is no longer aligning. It's like, oh, it's not like anything's gone wrong. You don't have to make yourself wrong, but here's the invitation. What is it that isn't feeling aligned here? So how has the big picture changed? Or are you just feeling a bit off today? Did you not have a good night's sleep, right? Like sometimes, I don't know, I've seen people make very drastic changes in their business and then realize that they were just ovulating and probably didn't need to do that, right? Where you're kind of ovulating on a three-day basis. So I think there's something about like really tuning in with yourself and then going, oh, okay, right, this makes total sense.
Just to vocalize this, I realized that I think I've been, because I worked with new business owners for so long, and I just don't want to anymore. Like it's so painful for me of just like, I want to work with someone who's a lot more established who, you know, we're talking about different problems. And so just to vocalize that for so I can hear it myself of, because it's so tempting. Sometimes I'm like, oh, well, that's easy. But then if I get into it, it's like, it's actually not easy. It's really hard. And I don't want to do that work anymore.
Love it. Yeah. I'm with you. I realized a couple of years ago that I wanted to work with coaches who have already got the fundamentals down. You know, you're a practitioner that has already, you've gone through the fundamentals, you know how to listen, you know, you've got that stuff. And it's like, oh, how do we add on something that is going to take you from good to great, hopefully, right? So I totally get that sense of, oh, it's a claiming of a new client group. Yeah. Am I right in thinking that the clients you want to work with, those more established business owners, from what you described when you read out your notes, they're kind of in that critic place?
Yeah, and there's maybe it's just like so many conversations around me. It's people who, like, I've been doing what I've been doing for 15 years. I'm ready for something different. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like there's a blank canvas in front of me. And mm-hmm. while that's exhilarating, it's like oh gosh, this is really scary, because it requires, this is so helpful for me to just talk this out. It requires to let go of what has been paying the bills and what has been the livelihood for many years, and that risk to do something different. But it means that you'll be, like, for me, it's like the hope is like more fulfilled, more on purpose, more interesting and more interested, you know, of just like, there's just, it's a newness, and not a newness like bright, shiny object syndrome, but just like, these are the conversations I want to be having. I've been having those conversations for 15 years, been there, done that. I'm over it.
Yeah. So the thing I love about this approach, where you're like writing to your clients, as opposed to like, where are they before coaching with you? I think this tends to shift us into more healthy adult self stuff, right? Like, where are you going, kind of thing. I'm hearing, tell me where I'm wrong though, Angela, but I'm hearing this is like firmly in that sovereign energy. What's the new vision? Where are your values now? Because values evolve, they aren't fixed, they're not blood types, right? How are you leading? What's the new goal? What's the new on purpose look like?
And what Jane was talking about with her clients, of like, they want to be more creative. There's a version of that with myself, with other folks that I've really enjoyed working with, is they want a balance in their life. They want to explore the things that light them up, and it's not just, what's the latest and greatest marketing strategy? Oh, how do I do a webinar? I'm like, I do not give two shits about any of that. Like, I cannot talk about it anymore.
Yeah.
But how do we have this full life that you're expressed and you are excited to be in it every day? Like, that's the conversation that lights me up.
I just love this, and I think probably because I just so relate to it personally, what you're saying. So you're like hitting all my value spots as well. But I can also, what I'm hoping you're also can all see is that when you get really clear about the space you're claiming for your business, and you communicate that in a really kind of clear and sort of clean way, you can't help but only attract the people that also share that. Because the folks that do want to learn how to do a webinar are like, what is she on, right? I just need the practice. Just tell me what to do. That those folks, right, they're going to be like, don't even see you. But the kind of beauty of the paradox of that is you will be seen and you will reach the values points for the folks that also want those things. Which is, you know, that's the thrilling part, you know. I think the, you know, the sort of commitment to it and the consistency is still the requirement, right? Like the thing of you keep showing up, you keep sharing the message, you keep inviting people to come and play, all of that is still kind of, you know, that's part of the job. But when the energy that you put into the message, that is, I think, quite palpable. Yeah.
Thank you for this exercise. It's been super helpful.
Yeah. So glad. So glad. Hey, Tina, how are you doing over there? What's going on for you?
Hi. Well, it's funny. I feel like I have two battling client avatars in my head.
Nice.
And I like them both. But it's funny, just doing this, I didn't realize how much of parenting is such a huge piece that my clients, you know, that's their role. So but basically, I work with people that they tend to kind of overwork. They're perfectionists. They have a lot of responsibilities to others, and they're usually in giving professions, and they're just, they like to be needed. And so they seek out places where they are needed. So there's like that martyr thing. They do like to overgive, but that's their identity. And then the other piece is that they're usually my age range, so 40s, their kids are older, their identity was invested in their kids, now the kids don't need them, and they've lost a lot of sense of what makes them who they are. What, you know, and I hear a lot of them saying, like, I used to be cool. That's the kind of things that I hear. But they really do, when it comes to this time of thinking about a career change or something, they forget why they're great. So those are my people. So I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot more, but that's them. So here's what I know about their challenge is that they work harder than anyone else, and they don't ask much for much in return. They're also burning the candle at both ends at the cost of themselves.
Yeah.
Here's what I wish that they knew. The world needs their leadership, their heart, their insight, and they deserve to choose themselves, and they deserve to come home to themselves. And what I see afterwards for them after working with me is hopefully they can step into their voice and into their strength, and they can choose from a place of honoring themselves, and they can care for their own heart with the same love as you care for everyone else's.
Love it. You know, it's reminding me a lot of what Jane was sharing as well, right? Like those, you know, for those of us who work with people who are in the helping professions and the giving professions, who are parents, that kind of shadow of self-acceptance where we kind of abandon ourselves and go completely into the other person's needs, or the client, the kids, whoever it is, other people's needs. There's so many layers to this that is super juicy, you know. I've seen folks who go into this from the kind of deeply personal aspect of this, and then from the more societal expectation piece of this. There's so many stories you can tell here. It's like,
yeah,
you know, and I think part of the nuance of this is, yes, emotional labor is a thing. Yes, self-care real self-care involves funded childcare, right? Like there's no doubt that there are like systemic issues here, but we still got to survive. We still want to take care of ourselves. And until those things are here, how do we, you know, make good choices on a day-to-day basis? Because we can't, you know, wait for the world to catch up. We need to create the world we want to live in. So there's something for me about, I'm just kind of riffing with you here, Tina, but there's something for me about like really honoring the experience of a person living in late stage capitalism who is feeling burnt out. I think if we ignore the systemic stuff, it's kind of like we're ignoring half the story.
Yeah,
I don't know how that lands for you, or if that feels too heavy.
No, I love it. And yeah. I'm very lefty, so you're safe. Yeah. But I'm just thinking about too. Sometimes I you know, the whole mom thing. Like I think I shy away from it because I don't ever want to tell someone how to parent because, you know, that's the hardest thing ever. And I also think I thought my bias was a lot of this parent stuff was specifically motherhood until I recently got a stay at home dad client. And I was shocked at like everything he said was exactly the same stuff all the women I'd spoken to, which I liked that too. You know, it's really the role less than our genders, you know?
Completely. I think that's, I found that as well, working with coaches who, you know, work with health and wellness / weight loss. And you start to see that the same beliefs come up regardless of gender. And as our notion of gender expands, you know, it's becoming less and less relevant around who it belongs to. You start to see it's the system. It's not the person, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, super fun. And I think there's some playfulness and creativity around that too, right? Let me tell you about a client who believes these things as a stay-at-home parent. And, you know, the person was a dad. This is not about you. You know, it's like you can kind of, you know, play with this a little bit to let people get that message in a really effective way.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Super fun. Yeah. So, yeah, Jane.
Can I just share something? I know I've already spoken, but it was really interesting to do this follow-on part. First of all, I think I realized something new about my clients is that many of them have quite a strong activist side. It's not just about caring, but there's a real desire to make change in the world.
Yeah.
And what I kind of realized is that the over-delivery, overworking all the time is kind of perpetuating the inequalities that they're trying to change. So it's really interesting. When I got to the post-coaching future, I was quite surprised. I wrote, here's what I see in your future. Someone who's fully able to believe in themselves and lead from a place of integrity and authenticity, and someone who's able to model the change they want to see. So it really took me to the heart of this idea of leadership, of self-leadership and leadership, not just... So move me away from ideas just around self-care to embodied change, embodied leadership. But then I went, oh, but I'm not there yet. How can I be promising something that I can't even put into practice in my own life? You know, so then I got into the, oh, I should wait and make sure I can do that before I can even start to help anyone else do that.
Yeah.
So,
and where did you get to with that thought?
Just went, oh, well, I can hear voices saying you only have to be two or three steps further ahead. But there's definitely some imposter syndrome there.
Yeah. Well, and I would say like two or three steps ahead of yourself, so you share your journey in a clean way, right? So not necessarily steps ahead of your client, right? Like I think part of one of the approaches I really encourage people to take is to be in relationship with the thing you're creating, right? So we don't feel ready before we take action. We feel ready as we're in relationship with the thing we're taking action on. Because that's how we go, oh, I've got this now, right? Because you need to have some experiences to be able to do that. Otherwise, it's all theory. So there's something about there's an invitation here for you, right? It's really hit you, this thing. I can kind of feel it, like, oh, I want to be the change. I want to embody the change I want to see. And I'm not there yet. It's kind of like your values are saying, oh, well, how might we do that, right? And as you start taking some action, there's going to be, and you get in relationship with what it means to embody the change you want to see. Once you get a few steps ahead of someone who's not doing that, or you not doing that, so a few steps ahead in the future, you can then report back from the front lines, here's what I'm learning. And you're doing that in a clean way so that you're sharing the relationship that you're having with this thing.
Mm.
Right? Yeah. So, and it's kind of what Angela's saying around imposter syndrome. I think it's helpful to see imposter syndrome as a calling forward energy. Where do you want to be? And it's a really fascinating trajectory on the whole imposter syndrome thing. Pauline Clance and I can't remember the other, Eames is the other researcher. They have both come out recently, so this is like 30 or 40 years after that original study, and said, oh, we kind of got it wrong because we said it was a woman's thing and we didn't take into account hierarchies, systemic problems and challenges, privilege, etc. We now know better. The imposter thing is the room was never designed for you to be in it. That's why you feel like you don't belong. So you can reclaim that space with that experience of being in relationship with a thing that you have the imposter syndrome around. I feel like I'm saying a lot of words and I'm not sure if that's landing for you, Jane. But it's very much about, you know, that the imposter syndrome itself is an invitation.
So I put together a training day on boundaries because I know I need to get better at holding boundaries. So a great way to really explore it is to learn enough about it to be able to teach it. And in the process of doing that, and particularly in the process of teaching it, I have already become way better around boundaries than I was before. So it's like, yeah. That's kind of what you mean, isn't it?
That's it. Yeah. Because the imposter syndrome is basically either saying this is something you're entering into, but you don't, and it's like, oh, I kind of want to feel more qualified, more experienced, more knowledgeable about this, but I don't yet. So we can make that mean, oh, there's something wrong with me. Or we can make it mean, oh, that's an invitation. I wonder how I might get more experienced, knowledgeable, feel more capable around that. So the thing that you did, which was to set up that workshop, has now given you that experience of embodying that offer.
Yeah. So rather than seeing it as imposter syndrome, maybe it's about, oh, how do I develop my sovereign energy around all of this so that I can lead this process, even if I'm not there yet?
Yeah, exactly. And you, this is the thing, like the experience, and really like what Angela's saying here about the hierarchy, like you kind of need to be at the top. Like, don't even bother having an opinion unless you know everything. It's such a, you know, BS approach to all of this. But we can embody that change by saying, well, I don't know everything about this, but I'm contributing my experience. I hope it helps. Yeah. I love that you had that additional extra insight, because I can completely see that activism energy in your work, Jane. I think that's really cool. There's a great book, actually, I'm just thinking about, called Real Self-Care. So Tina and Jane, you may enjoy that. It's by Dr. What's her name? Pooja Lakshman, I think. I'll find the name of it and put it in the thing. But Real Self-Care, she's on Instagram, but she talks about, you know, the system of self-care is stacked against you and really has a really quite great approach to this. That just, it's like the relief at reading that. Like, no, it's not you going crazy. You don't have any support for your childcare in America. This is the reality of it, you know. So it kind of does that thing of really validating people. Thank you, Adrian. Love it. And it just really validates that experience for folks. It's so, so helpful. And it's another way of saying, hey, dear client, I see you. So all to say, these two techniques I use, you know, the thinking, feeling, saying, doing kind of map. I've had that up on the wall and just added to it after each session. Whenever someone's given me some good info, the love notes to clients, I tend to, you know, have a morning each month where I'll just like write that kind of stuff and see what comes out. All of it's just designed to get me A, connected to my clients, but also kind of grounded in what I know to be true. So as I'm learning and growing and evolving, I'm kind of bringing my people along for the ride, you know, sharing what feels right. And again, it's that thing where you find your voice the more times you share it. You know, you find out how you want to say things, the best way to the best way to communicate a message, what the way you like to do that all comes from being in relationship with the sharing, with the marketing. Yeah. Oh, lovely. Some great great potential resources in there. Yeah. Thanks, folks. That's really cool. So what I'm hoping is that this gives you a way to see, I can use, you know, my coaching skills, my curiosity, my discernment, my empathy, connection. These are all the ways to do the thing of marketing and selling your coaching offers. Like, they don't have to be separate things. And what I found is that this is a deeply effective way of reaching potential clients, letting folks know how you like to do things. So it kind of demystifies a lot of the, but how do I get this out there? How do I share? So I hope that's super helpful just to come back to this as a practice. Yeah, really cool. And the thing about this is it's going to give you a kind of start point for how to then work with your clients once they cross over the threshold and join you inside. Tina, did I see you wave? Yes.
Well, I just had a thought because it seems like this would be a good practice for you because some of these things are pretty close to our bones, you know, like Jane and Angela was like, this is where I was, you know, a couple years ago. So I think it would be good for you to kind of re-examine where we are along in that path and how close our progress is, or, you know, I guess that could also help you see potential entanglements along the way too.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah, totally. Really cool. All right, folks. So what I'm hoping is this gives you some lovely, juicy stuff to play with. The challenge that the morning class have taken on is to use these approaches to post at least 5 times before the end of the month. Who's in? Yeah, got some hands up. Cool. Yeah. If this feels good to you, and you know, don't overthink it. It's more a case of like, you know, letting, you know, even getting support from each other. Of you can mention in the discussion forums, you know, like what you're posting or linking to it, so you get to You can get some eyes on it. Really cool. Yeah. Yeah. Love it. Love it. Love it. Yeah. Interesting. Substack is really taking off. Like, it's been really interesting. I don't know if this helps you, Jane, but my only kind of resistance to Substack is that it is another platform and I don't own my people. So Substack could go under, and would I have access to all the people that were subscribed to me? I don't know. I also don't know, because I know there's a ton of marketing research around the effectiveness of email marketing, as you know, we will buy from emails. I'm not sure if that's the case on Substack, because it's a more public platform. I don't know. There's something more intimate about feeling like you're getting a message from a person. So I don't know if that is a thing or not. It's just where my head's at around it. Please don't replace my judgment with your own. But yeah, I think, and I'm kind of excited about, getting on social media. I had a bit of a break over the summer as well, Angela, and getting back on there, I'm like, I think I'm going to do more reels and more videos. And as long as I don't have to dance or point at anything, I think I can probably manage that. But yeah, it's kind of fun.
I just wanted to say, I think your social media posts walk that line between being visible and sharing in a vulnerable way without oversharing, while retaining your own privacy integrity. I think that's quite a skill to walk that line.
Thank you. Yeah. What I would say is I have been oversharing online for about 16 years. So I kind of figured that out for myself, like what's too much, what's it? Yeah. But yeah. Old school blogger. Yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, there is this, one of the things I said this morning was, the technology that's available right now for us to be able to reach potential clients for free, largely, is insane. Insane. And you think about, you know, the therapists and coaches and other practitioners that built a practice purely on word of mouth. And just what's available to us now is mad. You know, it's crazy town. So I don't know. I sort of feel like you'd be mad not to do it. And another question that was asked this morning is, you know, whether you need to be on lots of different social media platforms, or whether, you know, LinkedIn, you know, where does that fit in? What I would say is, think about, where are your clients? If you're working mostly with people who are professionals and in business about business stuff, they're likely to be on LinkedIn, or, you know, on, if they're more of a creative business owner or a helping profession, probably Instagram. But you think, just think about where your people are and what kind of sharing feels good to you. Is it more visual? Is it more words? There isn't a right way. It's more like what do you feel like you can commit to? And then it's that, you know, kind of trust and safety thing that, oh, I sort of know you're going to show up a couple of times a week. I'm going to get to know you. I'm going to have you in my world. So, you know, it's that kind of thing that I think people sort of respond to. So, yeah, really cool. All righty. Well, I hope that helps just kind of get your marketing juices flowing a little bit. And we'll be back next week to start talking about Module 10, which is all around behavioral change. And we also do a thing on goals and an approach for goal setting. So that will be super fun. A couple more weeks of that. And then we also have a session on certification and another on our sort of closing circle, if you like, closing call. And then we'll start our monthly support and supervision calls, where you can bring anything you like. So, or to say, I'm really serious about the long-term connection piece. Like, we can stay connected for as long as you find this helpful, right? There's no end point unless you need it. So yeah. So I'll see you all next week. Take care of yourselves and have some fun with your marketing. Lucky clients. All right, loves.
Bye.
See you. Take care, Adrienne. Feel better. Okay. Bye, everyone.